Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Greg.
And I'm your other host, Ronak. And Greg, today was half-price burger day. I don't know about you, but I feel really full right now.
Yeah, I'll be ready for a nap soon, actually. it was a good burger. It was a good burger. Tonight we have a big dinner. I have a big dinner. Won't say exactly what that's about, but maybe in the future, people can reference this and be like, hey, Greg had a really big dinner that one night. I wonder what that was. We'll see.
Do you just mean a lot of food or a dinner of importance?
A little bit of both, actually, right? So we're going to a steakhouse in Center City. Won't say which one. Important meeting. You know, see if we decide to go down a rabbit hole or not and get some steaks along the way. But it should be fun.
Interesting.
All right, so today we're going to talk a little bit about raising capital. How do you do it? How do you approach it? Now that you've written your pitch deck and you've got that all fancified with Canva, now it's time to go out and actually see if what you wrote resonates with anybody from the investor side. So how do you do that? What do you do? How much should you raise? Maybe we won't get into how much should you raise, but more just like tactical. How do you actually go about the process of raising either venture capital or angel investor capital? We'll talk about both. We'll start with VCs, then we can go into angel investors a little bit. We'll talk about the tools that I've used in the past, the things that are actually super helpful, the things that you definitely should have, and then go from there. Ronak, you okay over there?
I'm okay. I'll survive this episode. Yeah, so I think this is a really important topic, right? Like anytime you want to take a startup and really start scaling and growing at a very quick rate, having capital in your bank account is really important. One of the largest investor groups out there is the venture capital community that really funds startups to fuel their growth. So we also know that there are many, many venture capital firms out there. So being a little bit thoughtful about which VC funds you go to, how you talk to them, this is really important. Just blindly going and saying that, okay, I've heard of Sequoia Capital on this podcast, so I'm just blindly going to reach out to them, might not be the best strategy, right? There's a little bit of thinking that you should do before you reach out to your first venture capital firm. So Greg, I'm totally curious to get your thoughts, but let me just kick this off with that. I think some of the things that you might want to think about before going to your first venture capital firm to pitch them is, one, what is the check size that you're looking for, and does that mesh with what they've typically done in the past? Two, what industry are you in? Are you in an industry where they've made a lot of bets before, or is this something completely out of their wheelhouse? Three, I would look at, do you have any warm connections? And we'll get into that into a little bit more detail on this episode, but do you have any folks that can give you a warm introduction, or is it just going to be a cold email? And the last thing that I would think about, and Greg, I'm curious to hear if you have others as well, is, are you both in the same vicinity, right? Can you actually meet the VC firm in person or not? But Greg, do you have any additional things that one should be thinking about? And we'll double click on all of these as we go through the episode.
And the way that I think about raising capital is similar to how you as a physician have done a lot of other things in the past. You can think about it as a very specific task, right? So when you were in high school, you applied to colleges. How did you apply to colleges? You typically make a list of the top colleges that you want to go to. You figure out, what are the SAT scores that I need? What are all the metrics that I need to potentially apply and get in? Same thing with medical school, same thing with residency. That's kind of how I think about raising capital, is you want to have a very formulaic process where you know exactly what you're doing, what steps you're on with each person, and you want to have a target list, right? Similar to applying to colleges, you want to have reach schools, you want to have likely schools, you want to have safety schools. And you can think about investors along the same routes. And so that's kind of the way that I always approached raising capital, was I'm going to pull out a Google sheet. I'm going to write down all of the investors, and not necessarily VC funds, right, or firms. I want to know the individual investors that I'm going to go after, like Ronak's talking about. So I think starting from there, right, starting from how do you find venture capital firms? That's A. Before you start looking into like which partner or associate or principal you want to go after in terms of messaging. So the way that I've always approached finding the venture capital firm is a variety of different tools you can use, right? There's Google, that one. You can type in anything like top digital health venture capitalists, and you're going to get some lists, you're going to get some websites, and they're going to be good websites. So one website that you should definitely know about is called Crunchbase. That is a great one to just look through and see all of the venture capital firms that are all active within the US, and you could even do it by like your actual products type. Is it a digital health company, blah, blah, blah. You're going to get hundreds and thousands of results that you then have to go through and sort through, which is why you should create a list. There's a couple of other websites that we'll throw into the notes as well. NFX, which is a venture firm, has, I think it's called NFX Signal, which is really good. It breaks down investors by the type of investments they like to make, the check size, the rounds that they'll do, and things like that, which is all the information that you're going to need to go out and figure out which partner am I hitting. And so, Renek, I mean, any other sources of information you use for finding investors that you don't know? Again, this is for more of the cold outreach.
Yeah, I would also look at LinkedIn as being an efficient tool because, and I would say Twitter to some extent also, because a lot of these folks that are working at different venture capital firms are typically posting about what are the cool new trends that they're seeing, what are the areas that they're investing in. And from what I've seen, if they're not tweeting very much or they're not posting on LinkedIn very much, they might not be taking new investments on anytime soon, right? Because like they use these platforms to sort of advertise themselves. So that kind of gives you at least some sort of indication, like, is it a good idea to reach out for them? Are they even writing checks right now or not?
So to make this even more practical, I'm just going to type in Andreessen Horowitz. They come up a lot in this podcast. There's like a handful of really well-known venture capital firms. Andreessen Horowitz is one of the relatively new ones, but they've raised gigantic funds and they have their own dedicated bio and health fund. So if you just type in Andreessen Horowitz, it'll take you, you know, in Google, go to the first actual result, go to Andreessen Horowitz website. And then what you're going to want to do is you can look in focus areas, you can go to bio and health, and they're all of the information on what they're interested in, their investment thesis, the partnerships that they have, and then it'll actually show you their portfolio within the bio and health fund. So you can say, okay, let me go through each of these companies and make sure there's something that's not necessarily super competitive with what I'm doing, because they'll likely pass if there's something competitive. However, if there's not, then that's a good idea that, hey, maybe I should actually look and see more about this venture firm. So then you're going to want to go to the team page and you're going to want to find the people that are doing healthcare investments. It doesn't look like they actually have it broken down by type of investments or the industry. So you actually have to click on people. You have to actually find people. I can give you a hint. So Justin Larkin, he's a physician that's there that does healthcare investments. Julie Yu is one of their main people that does healthcare investments. There's a few. But honestly, that's what you have to do. You have to go onto these websites. You have to do the work yourself and you have to look through and say, okay, if I wanted to reach out to Julie Yu, let me see what investments she's done in the past. So if I go here, so they just invested in, oh, look, the company that we just spoke about on the podcast, Hippocratic AI. It looks like she's also done Turquoise Health. Oh, hey, that's what I'm a Series A investor in. Cool. And then there's a bunch of other ones that just are literally on her profile. They also will show you the things that she's written. So they have, A16Z does a bunch of content. They have podcasts, they have essays they put out, they have thought process, like think tanky kind of things. And she authors a lot of it. It's a good idea to probably read what she's thinking, how she thinks about healthcare, about digital health, about all these things. You really want to start to understand the partner that you're eventually going to send an email to. And that's something we can go to next. But that's literally how I would do it, is go to the firm's websites that you're interested in potentially getting an investment from, finding the partner that meets your specific criteria for the startup that you are building. Cannot reiterate that enough. Find the person that makes sense to reach out to. Do not just pick somebody randomly or say, hey, I'm going to go talk to Ben Horowitz or Mark Andreessen because they're the names on the building. They're not going to respond to you unless it's something they're super interested in. And like the last time that I've seen them take like a board seat was Adam Neumann's new company, which raised, what, $1 billion or $250 million, whatever it was. Like, they're not going to take your email seriously because it's not the right person to send it to if you're a physician building within digital health. You've got to find the right people.
Yeah, I would also say that you can go the other way around also is and look at your peer companies, maybe folks that are a little bit bigger than you, and maybe not super competitive, but in the same general space, to go and see who they've raised money from to give you a little bit of an idea of like which VC firms might be in the right domain for you to go after. It's like, you know, if you think about, let's take the social networking space as an example, right? If you go and see who did Pinterest raise money from, who did Snapchat raise money from, who did Twitter raise money from way back in the day, right? Those are probably folks that have a good experience with the social networking world and know the ins and outs and what are the right questions to ask to be able to make an investment. So that's another thing also, like who are those larger competitors? We talked about the competition slide in our last podcast episode about the pitch deck. So while you're researching that, while you're researching your competitors, you might want to take a quick note on who your competitors are raising money from. And that might give you a little bit of an idea of like which are the VC firms to raise money from.
Yeah, there's a couple simple ways to do that to figure out who has invested in a particular company. So that's also on Crunchbase. You can go to the company profile on Crunchbase. You can see exactly who they raise capital from, sometimes down to like the angel investors. So you can get a really good sense of like who's interested in that particular space. And either you have to think like, is this directly competitive with them or is this just kind of a close approximation within a different field that you don't think is competitive that they still might be interested and invested in? Okay, so that's kind of like how do you find people? LinkedIn, great resource. Crunchbase, great resource. TechCrunch even, like when people have funding announcements, typically they'll talk about the people that led the round and the people that were followers in the round too. So you can get good names from that. And then just Google, like literally searching into different venture capital firms. And okay, actually another good resource if you're really interested in getting people that are supposedly really good on your cap table is something like the Midas List. So what the Midas List is basically, Forbes brings it out every year. They have a Midas List, I think, for the seed stage companies as well as like later stage companies. What it means is basically that is supposedly a good person to have on your cap table. They work well with founders. They get really good reviews from the startups that they've invested in, and they've invested in really big companies. So it's usually 100 people on each list. I don't know how hard it is to get on there. I have absolutely no idea. I don't know if it's like a popularity contest or if it's actually kind of a scientific process where they actually talk to founders. I have no idea, but it's another list that you can start with. And it'll at least give you a sense of like, where do a lot of these people come from in terms of the firms they're at? And then you can go into those individual firms and then go find people that make sense for what you're doing.
Greg, now that I've either gone to this Midas list or I've looked up a few different VC firms that are in the right space, I've looked at their websites to see who are the right partners or the folks at these VC firms to reach at. And let's say I have a list of like 5 to 10 people that I want to reach out to and chat with. If I find their email address, do I just throw a Zoom link, Zoom meeting on their calendar? What do I do? I just like send them a LinkedIn message connecting them with my Canva deck? Like, how do I actually practically go and getting a conversation started?
Yeah, so actually this brings up a good point, Ronak, that maybe you were trying to make and maybe you weren't, but like finding the email, that's actually can be a hard thing to do. So some venture firms are also notoriously difficult to figure out how do you contact them. So like if you go to, I think, Benchmark's website, it just says Benchmark and then gives an address. It doesn't give anything else. It doesn't show who the partners are. It doesn't show anything. And so you're going to have to do a little bit of sleuthing to figure out how do I actually send a cold email or reach out to this person in a way that is, yeah, an appropriate way. So there's a couple different things that you can do. There's some tools you can use or you can guess. Guessing is fine. And typically, if it's a smaller venture capital firm, it's usually going to be first name at whatever the website is, like .com. If it's a bigger firm like a Andreessen Horowitz that has hundreds of partners, then it's probably going to be first name dot last name at in like a16z.com, and you just try them if you don't want to go buy the tool. And so there are tools out there though that can scrape emails, and it does a pretty good job. It actually gives you like an AI score that says, you know, this is 97% likely the actual person's email address. And so I'll plug that here because I've used it in the past. It's called seamless.ai. Take a look at it. I can't remember how expensive it is, but it is a very good tool if you want to get people's contact information to be able to send these cold messages, or you just simply guess and you figure it out. Or like Ronak said, you go on LinkedIn, you friend them and you talk to them on there. There's a variety of different ways, or you Twitter DM them or whatever their social media of choice is. Cold outreach is difficult. So talking through that is going to be an important one. So you cannot just send a link. You cannot just send a Calendly link and say, hey, let's jump on a call. I'm a physician. I have this really good idea. You're going to have to be more tactical, a little bit smarter in terms of how you actually approach these cold emails. Cold emails can perform very, very well. I built an entire company off of cold messaging, both on LinkedIn and through email. You cannot be the person that they automatically delete your email. You get plenty of those as physicians. You know exactly what I'm talking about. You get them on LinkedIn. You get them everywhere. You know exactly who put any effort in and those people that didn't put any effort in. So when we're talking about researching these partners, you want to research them in a way that you can then reference what you researched in your email. So if you're responding or if you're trying to get a meeting with Julie Yu, talk about how what she wrote about healthcare marketplaces really struck you. And that's actually exactly the type of person that you want on your cap table because you're making a healthcare marketplace. And then, you know, go into her previous investments and figure out, hey, you know, why did she invest in those companies? Typically, you can find deal memos sometimes on different venture firms' websites, but you really want to personalize your outreach. You do not want to be the person that sends a cold email that's clearly just a form email to people because they just won't respond. Like it's a wasted at bat is the way that I see it. Like you don't want to waste any at bats as a startup founder. You want to really focus and hone in. And 5 to 10 emails, Ronak, I feel like is way too little. You're going to need to find likely 30, 40, 50, 70 investors that you're going to have to eventually send messaging to, but do not do the form stuff. Like make it personalized. And honestly, this is also like a marriage, right? Like this is not a relationship that you should take lightly. The people that join your cap table and potentially join your board on a startup are there for the long run. If you're a huge high growth company, these people are going to be with you for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I would also say that when you are making these emails a little bit more personal, when it's the first email that you're sending somebody, you don't need to send a 10,000 word essay, right? You don't need to go into that much detail. You want to write enough where you're able to express a little bit of interest in, you know, what they're doing, what their background is, something that they're written, and you just want that to be the spark of a conversation. I would also advise you to give a little bit of background on yourself. Right. In our last episode, we talked about the team slide, right? So like, how does this person know that you're a credible, real person to talk to, right? So you can drop a quick one line that like, you know, I'm a former radiologist that went to Dartmouth Med School or something like that, right? It's like, you know, you have a couple buzzwords, you don't need to dwell on them too much at all, but just like showing a little bit of credibility, being succinct, being personal, and just letting them know that like, hey, I got this startup also. So if you would be open to chatting, let's do that.
Also use your email signature. Also use your email signature to your advantage, right? So when Ronak's talking about, hey, introduce yourself. Yeah. You don't need to go hardcore into like your background. It's likely impressive, right? If you're a physician, you've done some cool stuff in the world, but if you drop in your email signature, LinkedIn, and then it goes to your LinkedIn and they can just search through, hey, what has this person done in the past? Oh, this person's a 3-time ex-founder. Like I've never heard of this person, but they had 3 successful exits and they're a physician and they trained at blah, 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 blah. Or maybe they were a C-suite executive at a hospital. That stuff gives you instant credibility, but don't just waste it, right? So have a signature line in your email that goes to your LinkedIn page or to your blog or to whatever you have that shows what you've done in the past. That's actually super important because a lot of time people will see, who is this person emailing me? Are they legit? Are they not? Because I'm going to take a meeting with a legit person. I'm not going to take a meeting with a scam artist, which we've seen, Ronak, which we've seen.
We have, but we identified them as a scammer, so we did not get duped. Okay, so Greg, so I've reached out to a bunch of different VC firms, made everything personal, went about it the correct way. I've got a couple of them that have come back to me and said that they'd love to chat further, and we have a meeting on the books. What should I expect going into this meeting?
Yeah, so if you're going to be pitching a venture capitalist, you have to, I would practice. If this is your first pitch, I would practice your pitch with friends, with family, with your spouse, whoever it is, or with your dog. I don't care. Like, you just need to get used to being able to spit out words that are coherent, that are exactly what you want to tell a venture capitalist within a 30-minute meeting. Typically, it's going to be a 30-minute meeting. It's not going to be an hour. You're not going to go through your deck, like slide by slide. Again, in your email, put your deck, put a URL, attach it, doesn't matter. Put the deck into the email so that venture capital firm or that partner or angel investor even can look at the deck before they say yes or no to a meeting. Hopefully they will look at your deck before they accept a meeting, because then it's not going to waste your time as much as they're like, well, you know, I took this meeting, but I actually didn't know what you were talking about. And so what you can expect going in is you to lead the conversation. You know, introduce yourself. Hey, I'm Greg. I'm a ex-physician. I left clinical medicine after selling my last company. Now I have a new idea. We're running with this because. And then go into the story of your startup. Like if this is your first time pitching, it's going to be difficult. You have to figure out, how do I balance giving too much, not giving too much information, or giving just enough? And you want them hopefully to leave wanting to know more about you, more about your startup. Most people are not going to get like, oh yes, we're willing to invest in your company right now at a $15 million valuation. We'll take the entire round. Like, that's not going to happen in the first 30 minutes of meeting with a VC, unless it's like the most amazing company in the world that they just have to get into literally with the first meeting. Also, most people don't have the power to do that. They have to go to their partners to figure out if it's going to make sense. So the first 30 minutes, you're really just trying to get your idea out to them in a coherent way and leave like 10 or 15 minutes for questions. You do not need to use all 30 minutes just to yourself speaking. Allow them to digest the information. Allow them to follow up with different questions, because they might be questions that you've never thought of because they're thinking about it from a completely different angle. Use it as a fun experiment though. Like, it should not feel like a super stressful situation. More than likely, everyone's going to say no to investing in your company in the first meeting. Who cares? You're getting practice. You're starting to understand, how do I pitch a VC firm? And what are their objections? Figure out what their objections are. Go out, solve those problems, come back to them. Like, there's nobody that's going to like deny taking an email from a person that they've had pitched to them 6 months ago. And guess what? I've solved all of the problems that you had in mind, and now I have $1.5 million in revenue. Like, that talks a lot more than, you know, just never coming back to them. So, I mean, that was a long-winded answer to how to approach the 30 minutes, but I would approach it in a very comfortable way. It's a conversation. It's not like they're not torturing you. So have fun with it. Like, you're a physician. Like, you have shitty conversations every day where you tell patients they're going to be dying. Like, this is not a difficult thing to do, to talk to a venture capitalist about a really cool startup idea that you have. So don't be nervous.
Yeah, I would also add, if you've never ever seen a pitch before, I think it's worthwhile at least checking out the television show Shark Tank on ABC. They have a lot of videos on YouTube about this, but basically what it is entrepreneurs going to a couple, or I think five really big investors and trying to make that initial pitch. It's dramatized for television in a lot of different ways. The way that they're raising money is not how you're going to be doing it in a venture capital meeting, but if you've never seen a pitch before, that's a nice way to just like go and start seeing how some of these conversations operate. I would also think about, since you're leading the conversation, you know, what are the things that you want to talk about? Well, we went over the pitch deck in the last episode. I would kind of think of it like what you're trying to lead with is sort of like summarizing the entire pitch deck into like a 10-minute thing without the slides being shown, where you're able to just like, you know, walk through who you are, what's the problem you're going after, what's the solution, how big is the market, in a very casual way. I would also expect that these folks are probably going to interrupt you all along the way as you're making this presentation or as you're leading the conversation. And that probably is a good thing. The more questions that they have, the more interested they are. You don't want their eyes to just like glaze over and just like not even be being paying attention and letting you roll. So be a little bit happy when they want to just dig in a little bit more. You know, they're like, oh, you're going after XYZ problem. You know, I just heard that like my daughter has this problem too. But can you tell me about it from a little bit of a different perspective? You know, you want them to be asking you questions. I would also say that you want to go into this meeting knowing everything about your company, your business, and where you want to take it. Right. I would imagine that as all physicians go into the medical school interview process, you probably don't want to say, I don't know, to any question. Same thing with the venture capital firms. Whatever question that they ask you, even if you don't know the answer, say that like, hey, let me get back to you after this call or something like that. Don't say, I don't know. Right. If they ask you, hey, so what's your expected gross margin 2 years from now? Yeah, let me just double check, and I just want to make sure I get you the correct answer. Don't say, I don't even know what a gross margin is, right? You can always Google it later on and figure it out.
Yeah, I remember my first pitch was with a angel investor that was based out of London. And I did it super early in the morning to fit into his schedule. It was awful. It was basically like, this is our idea. This is what we're doing. And that was like all I really had. And he had so many questions that I just couldn't answer. And I was like, I need to do more research. Like, I'm pretty sure he's like, what's your take rate going to be? I was like, I don't know what a take rate is. Like, what is that? And it's like, well, I know how much we're charging. And then I looked it up later. I was like, oh, that's a take rate. So you're going to not know some questions because you are not from the world of business, of venture capital. Unless you are, then you'll be fine. But you can learn all of those things. And actually, that's another good piece of information. Similar to, you know, applying to med schools, you want to have your first few interviews likely be at some of your safety schools. You want to get some practice in before you start talking to the Harvards, the Princetons of the world, or Princeton's a med school, so Harvard, Columbia, whoever it is, so that you can get some practice in answering questions, figuring out what are the questions that I'm going to get asked, and maybe I should just add that to the pitch deck so I don't need to answer them. And so just think about it as like just practice. It's all just practice. And then you get to the big leagues and you see how it goes. In terms of like what to expect after pitching, you can ask the partner or the associate or principal, whoever you're actually talking to, like, what is your process? What does it go from here? Typically, the way that most venture capital firms work is they have like a weekly partner meeting. Sometimes they do a couple weekly partner meetings where whoever that associate, whoever that partner was that met with a company will actually present that company at the partner meeting. And there'll be some kind of discussion of whether or not they want to continue going to due diligence and figure out, is this a company that we want to back, or it's a no. And so typically, depending on how quickly that partner meeting happens and how quickly they can give you an answer, it could be, you know, less than a week to get from either the meeting to a yes or a no, or to let's continue. So anyways, yeah, that's kind of what you can expect is just ask, what is their timeline? What is their process? What kind of documentation do they need from you? All of that kind of stuff that you can get at the very end of the meeting. And then if you do have questions about working with them, you can ask them then too, how often do you guys lead investments? How often do you follow on? What is your typical check size? Because sometimes people don't have that information on their website. Some people like to keep it under lock and key. So you can ask, what check size could I anticipate you guys writing if you were to join the round? And they can also go over valuation and they can tell you if that's in range of what they think you're worth or your company is worth, or if they're like, yeah, like I'm very interested, but the valuation is just too high. So then you can have those conversations with your co-founders of, do you really want to give up more equity for this person? Anyways, it goes into a lot of other details, but that's kind of the general process, finding investors. And it's the same thing with angel investors. I think it's more difficult to find angel investors because they're not necessarily like always saying that they're angel investors, but a good tool for angel investors is LinkedIn. If you just do a search for angel investor, it's going to pop up literally everybody that has that on their profile. And then you could sort by, if you only want to raise from physician angel investors, type in MD plus angel investor. It's going to come up with a lot of people. Yeah, that's an easy way to find angels. And then you can either just LinkedIn message them, or you can use that seamless.ai tool and find their email and send them an email, just similar to a venture firm. Ronak, anything else you want to add to any of this?
Yeah, I would just say that after that first pitch meeting with a VC firm, every VC firm goes in different directions. Some people will want to meet your co-founders. Other people are going to want to talk to some of your customers. Some folks want to reach out to like referrals for you. There's a lot of different ways that VC firms can take it. So we can't give too much guidance on what happens after that first pitch meeting. But if that first pitch meeting goes well, I would say really double down on that VC and just like paying attention, trying to make that work. Before that pitch meeting, you really want to be collecting more and more people to reach out to, as Greg was saying. Probably 5 to 10 people is not enough people to reach out to. But you know, once you start getting used to pitching, going through those meetings and getting good at them, you really want to start focusing on what happens after that pitch meeting and just being a little bit of flexible with how that VC firm wants to operate. Like Greg said, it's a good idea to ask them about their process and get that heads up on what are the things that they're going to want to look at. So that way you can go and do your homework to make sure that everything is buttoned up before they start having some of those additional meetings.
Also, you can get a good sense of like how serious a VC firm is by how quickly, at least how serious they are about your startup, by how quickly they respond to you and by how quickly they want to get you through the process. So that partner might be like, you know what, our board or our partner meeting's not for another 6 days. I'm going to actually see if we can convene the partners, you know, on Friday, and we can talk about your startup so we can give you an answer before the weekend. That's a typically a good sign that they're super interested in potentially leading you around. So you want to take that and at least take that information, put it in the back of your head and think, oh, I might have a term sheet by the end of this week. Maybe I should reach out to some other companies. And when that term or the other VC firms, and when that term sheet comes in, then you can say, actually, we have it signed, or we have a term sheet from another VC that's looking to lead the round. Can we move up our meeting? Can you move up and speed up your process? So the more urgency you can create from the VC side of things, the better likely your outcome is going to be. Because a lot of times VCs have this like FOMO where they're worried that, hey, they saw this deal, but it went too quickly for them and they weren't able to get into your round. And if you become the next billion-dollar company, it's going to be one of their misses, and they do not want to have misses, right? Like, they always want to get into these companies, especially if they see it. Like, that is the most frustrating thing for anybody, is if you see a company coming through, you got the pitch before anybody else did, and you slow played it and somebody else took it, and it becomes a huge outcome for that other firm, that's going to hurt.
I would add one last thing, that throughout this entire process, try to build relationships. Even if somebody does not want to invest in your company and decides to pass, be nice to everybody. You never know if you're going to be pitching to the same people later on again for a future startup idea. So try not to burn bridges as you're going through this process.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guy that gets passed on and then sends a very scathing email like, you're an idiot, you didn't understand this idea, go to hell. Venture capital world is very small. And if you're actually interested in starting a company and, you know, potentially starting multiple, you're going to want to play well in the sandbox. You don't want to make enemies. I feel like there's some very well-connected VCs that can make your life very difficult if you're trying to raise capital in the future. All right. That was a quick, again, practical, tactical guide to reaching out to VCs and angel investors. We'll keep doing this until we get through a lot of the components of early stage company formation. Yeah. Thanks for joining the Physician Syndicate podcast. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.